Hey everybody, Frank Wassenberg here with another episode of the CX Experience. Thank you very much for joining us. We're having a little bit of a different conversation today. In the past, what you've seen is we've had a lot of contact center professionals, contact center providers coming on and giving us their thoughts and feedback on the contact center. But a buddy of mine called in and was like, dude, you're missing the whole world, a whole world of the contact center, which is the technology side of the IT teams and what they're doing. So I said, let's get you on the show. Let's have a conversation about contact centers, the kind of the hidden soldiers of the contact center, which is the IT guy. So I'm very excited to have Ben Lucas join us today. He's a contact center IT professional with a major hospitality brand who we won't go into their name because we didn't go back around for the approvals or anything like that. But Ben, man, listen, thanks for joining us. I'm very excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
It's exciting times right now for you. I can't imagine that you have 45 minutes free to have a conversation with anybody in the middle of a pandemic right now.
Yeah, it's my lunchtime. I'm drinking my coffee. Well, lunchtime. It's really breakfast, but
that counts as product placement right there. I like that.
Yeah. I got this on a project a while ago. It's my perfect coffee size cup. If I have too much, I'll be jittery.
I've got my bottle right here, ready to go. So, man, listen, outside of working at home and the craziness of just trying to function in today's environment for an IT guy, I'm excited for the conversation because it's going to go down a whole different rabbit hole of what people are probably asking you to do, which is crazy, fixing their home networks, as well as probably getting... Why isn't this working? What's happening? My system stinks. And you're like, well, your kids are on Fortnite or they're streaming video games right now. I can't imagine what that side of the fence has been like for you as opposed to just day-to-day work.
Yeah. I mean, one of my buddies, he's a high school teacher and he's having to do online courses. So that's new for him. Thankfully, I mean, he does video game streaming a little bit. So he at least had some of the setup for it and he's able to record a little bit better than a laptop webcam and the built-in audio stuff. But he was having some issues with just his internet connection. And he's like, I don't know what's going on. And we had to troubleshoot his wireless network.
You're doing it all.
Yeah. So, and I mean, my grandparents, they have to do virtual telehealthcare now. So I was helping them over the phone try to understand what some software is that a hospital is trying to get them to use.
I'm like, world.
I've never used this. I'll try to help you as much as possible. But yeah, no, it's everybody is learning something new in technology right now. It's really pushing a lot of businesses, a lot of people just out of their comfort zone to do something new because the old stuff just isn't available right now.
I look at just my setup, what I did, right? So I went home, locked up the house, taped the windows shut, did the whole nine yards. And I've gone from one to two to three monitors in my home setup now.
Yeah.
And you're probably seeing that like crazy. Now, if you take a look at the contact center agent who knows what their home setup is, and you've got how many people are in your environment that you're responsible for? Well, that you take part in?
Yeah, I mean, we're about, seasonal influx, it's about 400 to 700 agents concurrent. So pretty good size. And yeah, they had to, it was about mid-March when everything started blowing up is when everybody's like, how are we going to do this? Because the agents couldn't sit in a contact center. So they're like, well, how are we going to do this? Who's going to take the calls?
I love it.
Thankfully,
so who was the first guy or the first gal that came down to you and kind of knocked on your door and was like, have you thought about how we're going to do this? Like, who was that said?
That was me. So
that was you. You threw up the red flag.
Early February, I reached out to one of the guys on the business and I was like, there's a pandemic on the horizon. Are we considering what happens if nobody can take calls? And he's like, I'll get back to you on that.
Of course I've thought about it.
I didn't hear anything until March. And then I was like, I probably should have been like poking them. But during that time, I was doing way too much other stuff to continue to pester them. But yeah, no, it's very interesting, especially like for different requirements, like PCI requirements. Like you can't just have an agent go home and work. They have to be in a PCI compliant environment, and you can't do that at home. So yeah. Like they have to keep some of the centers open. They have to run with a select amount of staff. But that was probably the biggest wrench that got thrown into everything, is because you have these different centers that are typically like one center will focus on one thing and then another one's focused on something else. But
yeah,
if the one closes and they were primarily dealing with PCI information, and then all of a sudden it gets, they can't work, it gets shifted to another center that normally isn't doing that, but they are PCI compliant. So it was about a week and a half of very
of like fire.
let's change this, and it was just back and forth, and then finally it just kind of calmed down, and we're in the new norm now. They at least have it to the point where we're able to handle call volume. Everybody's able to kind of do what they need to. The different centers were, I think they have a lot of people working at home now. I don't know if it's semi-permanent or if it's kind of just, that was handled more on the business side, with their local IT trying to get those agents resources. But I mean, internally, like for our organization, there was like a week before we started working from home where it was like everybody knew it was coming that we were going to be working from home in the IT org, because there was like, hey, can you check VPN capacity, and what do we need to do for soft phones to make sure that everybody has the ability to get calls, and then licensing for video conferencing. They're like,
oh, all right, my God.
You make sure. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was like a very stressful week. And then you get to like I think it was a Friday. We finally like, we're like, okay, we're going to have our first work from home day to kind of test it out. And for IT, it was actually kind of relaxing, because at that point we were like,
you're done.
We're done. We're done. And
they just pray that nobody pulls that one plug wait a second. You didn't tape that down.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of like, oh, this person needs this, or this person needs this. Like it wasn't that bad. But that was before like the contact centers, started like closing down. That's where the fires really started coming up, and we're like, all right,
okay, so
let's bring in everybody
to me then. So talk to me about that first week leading up to it. Right. Cause I want to go, cause like, well, the way I'm thinking, I want to cover a little bit about pandemic. That's how I say pandemic currently in New York. I want to talk about a little bit about the pandemic. I want to understand leading up to it, during and post, where you're seeing the craziness going. But I'd also like to get into just day-to-day where IT plays a role in the contact center that's oftentimes forgotten, right? But talk to me about that first week kind of leading up to it, right? You've got, what are you guys on? Are you guys on a premises system?
Yeah,
are you guys on a cloud?
Yeah, we're on-prem, which I think is kind of a blessing right now. I would love to be on a cloud platform at some point, just because there's a lot more capabilities, but the cost benefit of being on-prem right now is definitely saving us, because because like the we had a massive explosion of calls and wait time, because agents were offline for part of the trying to figure out how they're working from home. So we had, I don't know the percentage, but it was a significant percentage over what we were expecting for call volume for a short period of time, because people were trying to figure out what they're doing with their leisure. Yeah. So had we been on a cloud-based system, that would have been an increased cost. Thankfully, I mean, we were sized to capacity, so we were able to take that influx of calls. But then after, it just kind of tapered off, because now everybody is like, well, I'm stuck at home. I'm just going to wait until this blows over. And then we're going to get that influx of calls again.
Once the floodgates open, people are going to go crazy. They're going to have to get out of their house.
Oh, yeah. I know for myself, I'm like, as soon as this thing's over, I'm going to go take a week somewhere, probably in California. Maybe, I mean, I'll probably go up to Sedona just because I like hiking. But yeah,
just to get out.
I'm getting out of the house at some point after this because
it's
been too long.
So now you've got, I mean, listen, I've got four kids at home. So it's my wife has been unbelievable in doing at home learning and stuff. I mean, not even because she's upstairs and she can hear me. So I can't imagine being in like a one room apartment for this long. At least I have like a backyard. I can go do something. Like being trapped in the house for this long would drive me bonkers. No amount of video games can survive this much time. It's impossible.
Yeah.
But so now you've got that first week. You said, all right, we're leading up to this. We've got everyone kind of structured and figured out and they're home. And now they're there and they can work. But where did it, when I imagine that on a normal day, I used to call my IT guy five times a day when I worked at home and said, fix this, fix that. My video isn't working. This isn't working. He's like, well, you haven't updated the firmware in 4 years or something like that. Like, what were the first week of craziness like? Like, everyone's set up and they're there. Post proof of concept, how nuts was it?
From the contact side or the contact center side, it actually wasn't too crazy because the way that we have our system provisioned is we already were semi-mobile for the agent base. Mm-hmm. We weren't tied to a physical desk phone. So it we didn't have a whole lot from the hardware and the provisioning perspective from the contact center side. It was more of the reaction to the business requirements. Just how are we going to service these calls? Or we're getting an influx of these type of calls where we normally wouldn't. How do we kind of handle these and protect some of the other lines of business that we have? From just a general IT perspective, because we're our team, it's all voice. It's not just contact center, but we handle video conferencing even. There is a lot of how do we train everybody to use video conferencing 7 days or 5 days a week? Because I mean, before, yeah, you would have a occasional video conference, but it's usually one person working at home. And then you have a meeting room with everybody else.
Yeah.
Now it's, you have 12 plus people sitting on your screen at one time. So it's getting used to that. There's the security aspects of it too. And because I mean, now everybody is working from home. It's not just our organization and a couple other people. I mean, you have thousands of companies that are all working at home. So you have the increased security risk because now people are like, hey, let's war dial the Zoom conferences and try to figure out who's on what. So Zoom had to start stepping up and change their like default security. It wasn't just a user because that's what we were having to do is like, okay, go into your settings and set this to require a PIN. Don't just let everybody in. Use some type of a waiting room. So there's these default settings that weren't automatically set that you're having to instruct people. So that's what a lot of the first week was just really teaching people how to use the tools that were thankfully was already in our organization. I mean, there's other companies that I'm sure they weren't set up for it. So they were having to, all right, let's go get contracts with video conferencing. Let's get some VPNs set up. Like they're having to react a lot more drastically than thankfully our organization was already set up.
Think about it, especially with the prem-based system. A lot of these things around security, the VPNs, you've already kind of been in that world before. And since your agent base, I'm assuming, was diversified in geographic regions, you were covered pretty much on that front. Yeah. And now you've got everyone kind of stabilized. Are you seeing kind of a leveling out of requirements or demands into you guys for the contact center? Or is there things that have been popping up because of demand for new features or new capabilities?
So, I mean, we've always had, I mean, the issue is being a, well, I mean, everybody in the contact center system knows there's so many different things that can help the business, but there's a cost associated with them. So it's really, I mean, we've had to find that balance. I mean, based on our business model, it doesn't make sense to have some stuff. So there's definitely some things that the business is like, I wish we had this. But right now, I mean, we're not only are we facing a pandemic now, but there's also the economic repercussions that are popping up. So finding the money to actually enable some of these features, they're like, well, we can't do that right now.
Now, purse strings are locked.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it'll be a while before they loosen. But there's definitely the last, I'd say probably 3 weeks have been a lot more relaxed. Cause it's the new norm. So we're kind of settling in. We're looking more like future roadmap, like, okay, how can we be ready to accelerate as soon as this thing's over, or even just before it, so that we're just out the gate running. And also,
are you talking about that from a feature perspective, or are you talking about that, like, hey, we want to get out the gate running and we've never done this before? Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, so I mean, like, right now we're kind of in a lull. Like, we're not doing a whole lot. We're kind of trying to keep everything as is. I mean, yeah, obviously the purse strings are tied. But there's a lot of things that get kind of pushed off onto the side, from an IT perspective, while you're going after all of the business projects. So, I mean, right now it's making sure that your system's up to date as much as possible. Like, we're trying to enable the latest features. I mean, there's, especially like on-prem systems, there's features that are enabled or capable, but not enabled by default. Sure. And normally you enable what you need, but now you can kind of sit down and say, okay, well, I can see a business case for this, so I'm going to go ahead and I have the downtime right now to enable this, so that when we're ready to use it, it's available later on.
Sure.
I mean, that's one of the nice things about like a cloud system is you can kind of check a box a lot of the times. Yeah. It's there. Yeah. But with prem systems, you don't get that. So there is that, you have to have that expertise, or you have to have the professional services come in and help you enable it to get it available.
You kind of check the box of where the cloud guys are all saying premises is falling short, right? People weren't up to date on the most recent software versions. They weren't up to date on with the ProServe contracts, and they were kind of floating by five versions back. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, now you've got to increase capacity. But it sounded like you guys weren't kind of in that like environment. You guys were kind of keeping up to date with everything so that you could go. Just budget decisions would drive whether you did it or didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, we typically try to keep the, we try to drive a technology refresh mindset. So when it's coming end of life cycle, it's like, okay, we don't want to go end of life here and be stuck on an old platform, which is one of the downsides to just a prem system. So driving that constant, okay, what's on the roadmap? Is it worth upgrading now early, or is it, do we hold off until we're in a better position to upgrade? The other thing that's really come about, I mean, a lot of people, including our company, we've had staffing changes. People leaving just because they're like, hey, it's a great time to
it's a great time to be fired.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a great time to be fired. It's a great time to go to a different company. I mean, I don't know the percentage of people that are leaving on their own accord against those that were let go. But I mean, you're having to do more with maybe not more, but you're having to do more with less, because like, we're not getting professional services. So some of the stuff that we would have had a contractor come in and do, we're having to absorb internally now. So being able to kind of offset that, one thing I'm trying to focus on right now is just automation. What tasks can I do? I mean, and that's where a lot of the industry has been going for the last couple of years. Just automating stuff. And it's a little bit more difficult with like a prem system, you're kind of, you're limited to the older APIs and the capabilities that the system had. Whereas a lot of like the cloud-based systems, they're built on APIs on the ground level. So you're able to do everything kind of at, you get the one API and it's all there. Whereas the prem systems, if they have them, they're all kind of disparate depending on what system you're working with. So being able to kind of tap into those has really been a drive on our side, just to kind of make sure that we're leveraging the system as best as we can, and kind of protect us in the future. Because as soon as the gates open, business is going to be crazy. So we're like, okay, let's kind of prepare now as best we can, so that when we're ready, a lot of the simple stuff that usually doesn't take, it's not an exorbitant amount of time, but it's still an amount of time that takes away from other stuff I could be doing. Let's just automate that, have it ready to go, and then be ready to focus on whatever comes next.
Now, are you looking at AI to build into that now with the group? Are you looking at AI saying, I know you want to automate, and some people mix the terms up, but are you looking at AI saying, hey, we want to pull that into our stack now because it's something that would just make everyone more efficient?
I would love that. Unfortunately, the way that our technology stack is today, it doesn't have, we're kind of utilizing it at a certain level. So on the IVR, we're able to utilize it. But being able to roll that down into like routing logic and stuff like that, that would be a new partner, just based on the capabilities from the premise-based system.
Yeah, you got to pull in different people to do different things. What about QM? Yeah. Are you guys involved in that from a QM perspective? Because in your world, QM has to be like one of the benchmarks that you're living in.
Yeah. So I would love to have a different QM system, something that has some better analytics. I actually was just on a call yesterday with it was a presentation from Converge One. Yeah, the NICE partner, and it was more around the fraud side of the house, and that's one of the things that as an engineer I have like the hardest time with, is like, they're like, hey, we have this person calling in, it's a fraudulent caller, we need to block that caller. I'm like, well, if they're a fraudulent caller, they probably have the capabilities to just change their number. So yeah, we're not really stopping. Yeah, I'm like, it's not going to really stop them until we like max out our list of capabilities for blocking numbers. So I would love to be able to have some type of like voice biometrics security system that we can actually identify some of that fraud. And I actually reached out to business to just see like if they could estimate what kind of impact fraud has on our budgets. Because if we can get a business case for it, it would be worthwhile implementing. But
yeah,
I
had Rusty Jensen on the line from, on the show a couple of weeks ago from NICE in Contact, and you're talking about their Neva system and the voice biometric stuff. It's a really cool capability that they've launched, and it's neat. It's really cool. In just what you're talking about is one specific application where all of a sudden you don't even have to let them know, but you just hear it. It's that person. You can validate that's that person. You can get rid of the call. It's really powerful what NICE is doing on that front, at least.
Yeah, and that's the tough part is with the contact center side. I mean, security is like, I love security. So outside of
right now, man. Yeah. Well, your side defense, I mean, credit card, PCI, security. I mean, you're dealing with private information.
Yeah. The tough part is on the contact center side, like you can protect as much as you have tools to protect. I mean, so your systems are protected. You're able to restrict the PCI environments, so you can only handle the data inside certain areas. But then you get to like the voice side of it. And if you don't have some type of automated system to kind of identify those fraudulent calls, like you're not going to be able to do much. Like, you're relying on your agents, and when you have hundreds of agents, that person calls in, they get one person, they go to somebody five seats down the next time, and then another row down the next time. Like, you're not getting the same person, so they're not, you're not able to tie that information together. So yeah, having some type of AI to kind of help parse that data is really going to be crucial. And as it becomes more prevalent, I mean, somebody like back in the day, like 10 years ago, somebody had to know what they were doing to be able to spoof a number.
Yeah.
They had to have special, not really special equipment, but they had to know what they were doing with the computer to really be able to do it. But now, I mean, you could have some guy that looks up a YouTube tutorial and they're spoofing numbers right out of the gate.
I always love that Robert Redford movie called Sneakers, where they're doing all these crazy things on computer and they're using all the buzzwords, and you're like, that's easy. And you're like, no, that was really complicated. They had to do all this thing to reroute numbers. It's amazing just where the access to fraud now, because the energy that goes into that, the energy these guys put in is bonkers.
It's unbelievable. I mean, you have entire, I guess you can call them companies, but you have entire groups of people that are focused on fraud. And it may, like, there's the two sides to it. So there's the consumer fraud, where they're like tricking people into giving them credit cards and doing that kind of stuff on the malicious side. But then you also have the people that are just individual that are trying to take advantage of different companies, especially right now. Like, customer experience is a huge driver for companies, and trying to appease their customers. I mean, you're going to try to do whatever's best for your customer. But the fraudsters are going to take advantage of that.
So just phishing attacks now. I wonder if we go 6 months out into the future, if we look back and say, everyone's been emailing meeting links and everyone's been emailing and sharing information now, I wonder if we see there was just this exponential rise in phishing attacks, or there was an exponential rise in something security-wise to try and get into people's stuff.
They're already seeing
that. They already are.
So I've been sitting on some of the CISA, the Government Cybersecurity Alliance. They've talked about just a massive upswing of phishing attempts just around COVID. Because they throw, hey, here's some information around the virus, go ahead and review this, and there's an attachment. And so they go ahead and click on it, and suddenly they're infected, which is another, I mean, because there's so much unknown, people are more inclined to click on something that they may not have, because they're like, well, this is relevant to me. I mean, back in the day, I mean, prior to the virus, to really get somebody's attention, it had to be something that was targeted. So you'd have your spearfish. And so you would send something that's like, hey, they would scour your social media and try to find something that would be interesting to you. And then they'd send it. Now it's, hey, here's a virus, and they can just blast it out. There's no spearfishing. They can just send it out to everybody and they're going to get hundreds of hits. So from an IT side of that, that's terrifying, because now you have the security risk from all the individual users, and they're also at home. So they may not, it's not even so much from like a work computer, because I mean, right now I'm talking to you on my personal desktop, but I have my work computer right in front of me. And so whatever I'm doing on my personal computer, now that my work computer is on the same network, that's additional risk. So security teams all over, I'm sure, are having a blast responding.
I can't even imagine
the risks, but I mean, that's adding to the new environment. And that's why a lot of companies didn't want to do a work from home type of environment, because it's not just, oh, hey, here's a work laptop, only do work on it and take it home. I mean, you have the added risk of them being on their home network. You have no idea. I mean, you have to treat their entire home network as a hostile. And
You got a teenage kid there surfing the internet. God knows where you are. You know,
yeah.
It's like that Chappelle thing with the internet was a real place. You know, it's a scary world, man. The internet. God knows where you're finding internet, where you're finding stuff. But
yeah.
Now, when you got everybody up and running, and everyone's kind of stabilized now, and now you're thinking about bringing them back, and you're saying, I got to get them back. I mean, where are you seeing kind of the big problem with the floodgates? I mean, where, like, is it physical geography? Is it no one wants to come back? Like, where do you see your world? And as it relates to IT, obviously, because you're going to be supporting a massive center.
Yeah, so there's going to be a couple of different types of people, I think. There's going to be those people that they're working at home, they have kids, they're working on their table.
Yeah.
And they're like, please let me go into the office. I want some peace and quiet. Yeah. They just want to get back to the office. And then there's people like me that I have an office that's set up for me to be able to work. I'm like, I'm much more comfortable in my home office than I am in the office. I do miss being able to see my coworkers. So being able to go back at some point, I'm excited for, especially being at home for so long. Yeah, no, it's great. It's quiet. I'm able to focus. So you have those two different types of people. And I mean, it's going to depend on the industry, on the department. I mean, it's not even so much I'd say at a company level, it's really at a department level. Some departments, like, it's much more difficult for them to work at home than it is for them to work in the office. But I think even once stuff starts getting relaxed a little bit from the state laws and their guidelines, you're still going to have people that are not going to want to go into the office because they may be immune compromised. They may have somebody else at home that's immune compromised. So they're going to be worried about going in. So you're going to have more of a divide in the companies. So you're going to have some people working at home, some people in the office. And I think where we're at right now from a technology perspective, if you already have the VPN set up and you have the video licensing, you're going to be in a good place from an IT perspective because you already have the capabilities for the person to be flexible. So it may be that they want to go into the office, but they can only go in the office a couple days a week, or the company is going to kind of stagger people. So you'll have some people go in one day a week or 2 days a week. I could see that kind of happening. But from a technology side, there's not going to be much of a change. I know they're actually, there will be some changes, depending on how the company is laid out. Cause I know some companies, they have an open floor plan, where you don't have an assigned desk. You kind of just go in and work at a free cube.
Yeah.
But with the guidelines that are coming out, I mean, you don't want to have somebody come in that possibly is sick, infect a workspace, and then somebody come in the next day and then get sick. So they're going to have to figure that out. I know for our company, they're talking about just taking phones off desks for that exact same reason. If somebody came in and was working at your desk and then they were using your phone.
Oh, yeah. Bring your own headset. Bring your own device.
Yeah. I mean, soft phone. I mean, that's the thing. They're just going to say, you've been using a soft phone. Here's a soft phone. Like that's where it's going. We've already been talking about that as a collaboration team for the last 2 years, is how do we go from, I mean, the phones don't change. I mean, you have the same type of phone that was with that platform 10 years ago is still available. I mean, there's small changes to it, but it doesn't change. So until that phone breaks, it just stays on the desk.
Yeah.
But we've been like, all right, do we need these phones? Like, we can clear up. It's from an IT perspective, it's annoying because somebody changes desks. Okay, well, I need to go move that phone. It's not just, okay, go sit in your new cube, you're ready to go. You have to physically either physically or remotely migrate that device configuration or the device itself.
Did you guys do laptops for everybody or personally? Was the preferred? Clients, no nothing. It was already everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So for our agents, that would be a different story because they had either a thin client or a desktop of some sort. So that was the struggle of getting the agents kind of deployed, is how do we migrate them? How are we able to support this? Because they can't, like, you can't have a agent with a laptop that has PCI data on it. But for the majority of our organization, we already had laptops. So it wasn't, that was a definite benefit of having an organization that was already more tech focused and being, kind of, in line with a work from home, mindset. You had the laptop, you could take it home, you worked from home. I mean, we weren't a full work from home force, but it was at least partly.
But you were mobile enough and disparate enough. It wasn't like all 600 people were sitting in one office down the block. You know, they were all disparate enough that they could technically pick up their stuff and go someplace.
Yeah. And we were actually at the point where we were trying to size down on desks because we have so many like staff. It's like, we don't have enough space for everybody. So they're like, go ahead and work from home. There are some people that work from home 100% of the time, or they came in for a meeting on one day a week, something like that. But it's going to really depend on the company. Cause I mean, the companies that were like, we have desktops and there's a spot for every single person. They may just have those people come right back in the office because that's the mindset of their management.
It's what they know. But this is – I was on a call a couple weeks ago with John Lynch at Serenova, and I always like to go back to this one because we kind of called this the world's largest case study for working at home, whether it's effective or not. This is the single largest case study for it, like, because it's going to be – I mean, I go back to it. I've gone back to it once or twice now because you're going to have productivity level – with all this going on, and whether it's higher or lower, it's still going to be what it is. And when all these external factors go away, it's only going to get up. You know, it's only going to look better. So it's a really interesting case study for that.
Yeah, that's what I've noted. Like when I would go into the office, I would get in and I'd work. I would always take my lunch and make sure I had like an hour.
Gotta eat healthy.
I would be like, all right, it's quitting time. And I would leave like, I was checking my watch for that time because I knew I had traffic, and then it's like, all right, if I leave at this time, I can beat the traffic. But I find like when I'm working at home, I get sucked into something. Especially like right now, I'm studying Python, so I've been doing automation with Python, and so I'll be sitting there and I'll be like, I'm so close to figuring this out, and then I'm like, I'm working and working. I'm like, oh, it's an hour and a half after I was gonna quit.
Wife's over there, like sitting there at the table,
She comes to the door. She opens my office. She's like, "You done yet?"
I love that feeling.
Yeah. I'm like, "I am so close. Just give me like 5 more minutes." She's like,
"Yeah, she just knows, man." Now, what mistakes are you seeing? Like, if you had to look at this and say, "Let's take a normal environment, a normal day in a contact center." Are you seeing the contact center manager engaging with IT enough? Are you seeing a collaboration where it's a team? Or are you seeing sometimes where you know there's actually conflict there? But like, it's kind of two questions. One, where do you see mistakes in engaging IT? And then two, how do you see those two groups with the contact center pros and IT working better together?
I would say that right now there is a focus. I mean, with the downturn in the economy, they're really focused on, hey, where can we drive revenue? Where can we cut costs? So they're really working hand in hand with us to kind of like look at certain things like, hey, can we change this? Can we do this? Just trying to make those improvements, either in cost savings or in revenue driving.
Yeah.
And we've always done a pretty good job at that. But I feel like right now it's more of a focus. And especially right now from like the IT side, from the top down, they're like, where can we cut costs? Like, do we have any systems on that should be decommissioned? Like, can we turn off anything?
I've seen a lot of that actually. I've seen clients have come to us and said, if we look at our systems, if we look at our stack of technology, we have duplicative services all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, messaging apps. How many messaging apps do you really have in the system right now? You know, there's all these different features where you can cut costs because they're duplicative.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, normally, like, you have a feature that's enabled on something that does something else, especially from like the collaboration side, like Cisco. I mean, you have voice, you got video conferencing. I mean, some of the stuff requires servers to be stood up, but you have that available. And then you have Microsoft Teams, and then you have Zoom, and then you have WebEx. Like, you have a plethora of different products.
And everybody has their favorite because it's the best.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's how it happened. I mean, yeah. it always is somebody has a favorite and it kind of gets pushed down. But yeah, like driving cost savings has been huge for right now. And from like the IT side, really driving the security of, I mean, nobody is in the office. So it really opens another attack front for the company.
Yeah, it's just somebody physically with a hammer getting in there now.
Yeah, I mean, somebody could literally break into the office. I mean,
no one's been there for six weeks.
We have alarms, and I don't think our office has other people in it. So they're going to.
Yeah, they're going to.
Somebody was like breaking in, they would notice it.
Don't get any ideas, guys.
But it's a different attack vector that you normally wouldn't have to really think about. I mean, at night, yeah, there's less people in the office, yeah, but you typically have some people. Yeah. So
what about scope creep? Like when people come back, I love that. I love that you're already laughing because we see that a lot where false starts happen and scope creep happens because everyone kind of gets their eyes wide open about all this stuff. How is IT getting involved to kind of say, okay, not that I want to be the wet blanket, but I want to talk to you about really, you're going to look bad if you try to do it too fast.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times, it comes in two directions, really, is what the way I see it. We rarely ever get brought in at the right time from an IT perspective.
Yeah. By the it's way, either, we're doing...
yeah, it's either super late, like, oh, hey, by the way, we're rolling this out next week. Can you help us? And we're like, we need some servers. You're going to have to push that back.
Yeah.
Or it's, oh, we're starting on this project. We need to bring you in right now. And then it's, oh, we're in the initial just discovery phase and we don't even know if we have a budget to look at this product.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it seems like the business has, I mean, we're not doing a whole lot of projects like that right now because we're not looking to purchase anything.
But when it comes back, it's going to be, by the way, I sat on this demo, I sat on this webinar, I sat on this thing, I want the bright shiny toy, let's bring it in and you're going to be bombarded.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be interesting. It's really going to depend on how well the economy recovers because, I mean, if it snaps right back and we're right back to it, then you're going to have those, hey, I saw this new feature, we really need this, it's going to help us drive revenue, all right, let's rush to get that in place. Or there's going to be that other thing where it's like, we really could use this, but we're going to be apprehensive because we don't know how the economy, like when we're going to have budget for it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, I mean, it's really on the tough part is driving that conversation from the business to the IT properly. Cause sometimes it's happening at one level. So you'll have like the C-levels talking to the directors, but then the directors don't quite get it down to the managers and the IT, or vice versa, is the IT is looking at something, they're like, hey, this is really great. This can really help us have a lot of efficiency in our department. And it gets up to the manager and the manager's like, yeah, that's really good. But they don't have that same passion to get it to the director, or the manager's like, hey, this is great. But then the director looks at it and he just is like, yeah, no, that's not what I really want. I really want to focus on this side of it. Kind of getting back to like the favorites. It's like, this is what I really want to have happen.
You guys have that person? Do you guys have that contact center person that says, okay, this is our roadmap, this is where we're going, or is it a bunch of little fiefdoms trying to rein everybody in? Or because I really do view that change management person, that continual and performance team, that continual improvement team as a major thing for a company.
Yeah, it's kind of tough when you have, so we have more like segmented departments.
Sure.
So like your lines of business are really driven by certain organizations across the board. But there is definitely some communication issues when it comes to the different departments that I've seen, at least from the business side, to really kind of collaborate. Because one business org will be looking at one tool and then somebody else will be looking at something.
Yeah.
And then they both come to the IT team like, hey, can we implement this? I'm like, well, you two are both looking at something similar, but completely opposite. You guys should talk together. So we can kind of figure out what we're doing. Cause a lot of the times what happens is the business pushes the business case. They'll get budget allocated. But they haven't really communicated across the board. So they get something that may work for them, but doesn't quite work for everybody else, where there would have been another product. And that kind of goes back to bringing us in too late, because we're like, well, did we look at anything else to see if it really works for the whole of the contact center? And that goes, it's really the same across all of IT. Because I mean, you have like the Windows team that will drive Microsoft Teams for a collaboration product.
Of course, greatest thing in the world.
And then you have like the network collaboration side that will push like Cisco Teams or WebEx Teams.
Yeah.
And then you have Zoom now. Like it depends on where it comes.
All three.
Exactly. Because they'll get bundled licenses for Microsoft Teams with the Office 365 licenses. And then you get the collaboration licenses for Cisco or whoever. And yeah, you just get overlapping things. And then it's really who can drive, like, then you get the IT orgs trying to drive it up. Like, who can drive it better to make this the standard for the organization?
Yeah. So now if you took this and you said, all right, I'll ask you two last questions. And then if you took this and you said, okay, I mean, the way I'm hearing you is IT has to be involved very early on, be collaborative, be the glue that kind of sticks everything together, because the business has needs. IT has capabilities that they can only match, and you can only do what you can do with your infrastructure before you have just a bad experience with the whole thing.
Yeah.
I've always viewed it, there's nothing worse than rolling something out and it just not working well. It just becomes, everyone just looks stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone wants to do chat. Chat's the greatest thing in the world, but it's off 18 hours a day because you don't have enough agents to do it. You know, it's silly.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous example, but it's an example.
No, that's a perfect example, because if you advertise a service and it doesn't work or it doesn't work properly, you're impacting your customer experience and it's just frustrating to the customer. They're going to go somewhere else that either has that 24/7 service that they're looking for, or they're just going to go to somebody else out of frustration. Yeah. I mean, I've heard it for like the last several years, but voice is going to die, but voice is not going to die. I mean, it's always going to be there. Email, chat. I mean, you get into those, the omni-channel platform. You have to really do it right. Otherwise it's just frustrating, especially like implementing like some type of a chat bot.
Yeah.
Anytime you implement AI, like even on like the voice side with the IVR, like if it's not done right, it's frustrating, especially.
I hate IVR. I hate them. They all stink. I hate it.
As a contact center engineer, I have to call it. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, I'm just trying to test. I want to get through to this.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to like bypass it as quickly as possible. So having it efficiently done, I mean, natural language, anything is great if it works right. If it doesn't, it's the most frustrating thing possible, because then you're stuck trying to figure out how to work it.
Yeah, but that natural, like, so that natural, and this is again, so you were clearly on a nice in contact demo, right? So like that natural language processing stuff is cool, but if it's just helping you get to an agent, that's fine. Everyone can do that. But if it's getting you to that agent with intelligence about your open case, about where you are with a stat, about where you are with a problem, about where you are with your late fees or whatever the case may be, it's helping you get to that agent, that letting that agent get you off the phone faster, or letting that agent be more effective when they get you. That's valuable. That's huge.
Yeah. Well, and it also is, you're able to do some of the automation that we were talking about earlier, like in the IVR. So they don't have to talk to the agent.
Yeah.
because I think that's the frustrating thing is if you go through an IVR, you give it all this information, and then it dumps you out and you go to an agent and then they confirm all that information. And then they still have to take time to process it on their side to do something. Yeah, there's a little bit of process efficiency because you've already provided all that information in the correct format for them. But being able to drive that automation and be able to just handle them in the IVR so they don't have to talk to somebody. That's really where the contact center thrives, and where businesses are going to see a lot more better customer experience and better loyalty. The tough part is it's really a fine balance between offering that better customer experience and keeping the cost low. Because any of that automation, I mean, it adds 6 digits worth of numbers on pretty much any contact center. As soon as you're like, I want to do this type of automation, at least from like a natural language perspective, chatbots are a little bit simpler because you can utilize some of the existing technology. But it'll be better once this becomes more standard, especially with stuff like Alexa and Cortana. Like, I mean, video game systems have kind of been piloting the voice recognition for a little while here, which is great. But once it becomes a little bit cheaper to do that voice recognition and it's good, like it has to be good, because if it's not a good voice recognition, it just, it sucks. It's frustrating and you don't want to use it as a customer. So as soon as it's there, that's really going to be the, that's where you're going to be able to start removing some of the agent count that you have, because you're going to be able to process the simple things in the IVR or on an email thread with a bot.
Yeah, you got everybody wants the Halo experience where Cortana's sitting there talking to you, right? That's what everyone prays for. If that works, if that was great, or the Jarvis thing, you know, that's if that works, that's great.
Or the
that's
computer from Star Trek.
Just give me one of those. I'll take any one of those. That's all I want. That makes my life easy. But listen, man. So let me let you go, because it's been a long time. I've had you on for almost an hour now, and I know how busy your day is. And I could probably look at my watch and 5 o'clock still be kind of bullshitting you. But let me close with one thought. Right. Let me get those two last questions, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
At the end of this, when you look back, are you standing by the fact that you were happy that you had a prem-based system now because it afforded you certain capabilities, or do you think you would have had a different experience? Because that's the major argument in my industry right now. And I'm always curious because I get mixed reactions from people based on how quick they had to react and what people want you to hear.
So I will say the premise-based system definitely was good from a cost perspective, because we already realized our cost. We already had it in place. We didn't have to change anything. We also had the licensing in place to allow us to be mobile. For an organization that wasn't ready, that might have been a nightmare, because then they're having to, it's not a, some of the premise-based systems are going more towards a subscription plan, so they might have been able to burst a little bit or get some of the licensing they needed at a cheaper cost. But if they had to dump a bunch of capital just to add the licensing they needed to be mobile, that would really be a bad thing right now in the economic uncertainty. That being said, there would be some of the cost benefits of being on a hosted platform where it is usage based. So if you did have, like, you weren't getting business, you weren't driving revenue, you're able to have your costs at a much lower place and kind of go in line of what you're expecting. So for us, it really works having the premise-based system right now. Because of the cost savings. But at the same time, for think healthcare. Healthcares are probably getting slammed.
Oh, they're getting crushed.
And so being able to have a cloud-based system where they're able to expand the capacity that they need and be able to turn on features like some type of a natural language IVR where they can kind of filter out some of those calls from actually going to like a nurse or whoever.
Telehealth's going to be trimmer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I'm thinking. So that's exactly who the cloud would benefit right now. And being able to have the ability to add expanded agent base when the upswing starts at the tail end of this for us would be nice. But we're already provisioned to expand on capacity to meet that. So for us, I'm going to say premise is probably where we should be right now.
It worked because at the end of the day, what you're saying is it worked because it was fixed. It allowed you to know what your budget was, but you didn't really turn on a lot of added features because it would have been a little extra cost. So you stayed with what you were doing already, which was already working for the business.
Yep.
And now the last question is, again, back to IT standpoint, if you're talking to contact center managers out there today and they've got to go work with their IT teams, if they haven't done this by now in this completely work at home environment, they're exposed significantly. Like, what would you say if you haven't considered this right now from a security or from a quality perspective, or what would you say is the number one thing that they haven't done it yet in a work at home environment that they really need to get on because it's leaving them exposed?
I mean, if their agent base is really fully remote, they need to make sure that they have hardened endpoints for those agents, especially if they're working at home. Cause I mean, you're bringing your work environment into the home environment and it's hostile. You have to consider it that way. I would hope at this point, most people have at least that basic of security.
You'd be surprised,
covered.
Man. You'd be surprised.
And that's why I say it. Like, if they haven't covered that, that's like the bare minimum.
That's baseline. That's table stakes.
And it's not even so much anymore having your standard antivirus installed, but you need to have some type of intelligent threat detection. I mean, there's numbers and numbers of products out there, but it's more based on having something that's using, it's analyzing the behavior of something for a malicious type of behavior more than just, hey, this file specifically it matches this definition, so this is malicious. That's going to be huge. Fraud, I mean, it really depends on what industry you're in. Like, yeah, right now, like, if you're slower, fraud may not be that big of a deal because you're able to identify it a lot easier. Analytics, that I think to me, that's the biggest thing for a contact center is having good analytics because you're able to identify issues, identify areas where you can improve and drive revenue so much easier. And without it, it's just you're flying blind. And that kind of goes back to that whole endpoint protection, being able to identify stuff.
Yeah,
You have to have visibility in IT. And that's really where a lot of companies have issues because there are so many disparate products. Like, being able to monitor and see what's going on from a technology perspective and just from a data perspective. I mean, look at Facebook and LinkedIn, like all the big data companies, like that's what they're just making money off of is they're able to take data from different areas and combine it and market it.
And even Zuckerberg had the little tab over his camera for security too, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Like, you don't want to give free data to people. You don't want to have that data. But at the same time, you want to have the data that your company needs to be able to function.
That
really what IT is all about. It's ones and zeros when it comes down to it.
Ones and zeros at the end of the day. Make sure they're going to the right place at the right time. Well, listen, Ben, I got to tell you, man, thank you very much. I'm happy that your wife hasn't had to knock on the door yet and say you're only going to be a half hour and you've gone long yet. So that's great, man. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Thanks,
hang out for a second. But listen, man, I appreciate it. Talk to you in a bit.
Yep.